you're on.
Okay, so this week we're going to be going over Daniel 7, 15 to 28. Hopefully you've had a little bit of time to go through that. But that's what we'll be going through. So let me also say that, let's see, 15, Daniel's vision interpreted. Some of what we're going to be covering tonight is going to feel like we're repeating ourselves, because we're going kind of over the same stuff we went over, except this time it's going to be from the angel's perspective. He's providing the interpretation. Last week we talked about what Daniel saw, and now we're going to be talking about what he learns. So, let me start by reading Daniel 15, and I'll go to, I may not do the whole thing, but we're going to go to the 28th, so we'll finish the chapter today. I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. That's an interesting admission, isn't it? So this was overwhelming for him. I mean, it was overwhelming for the Apostle John to see what he saw, which we understand as the Apocalypse or the Book of Revelation of Jesus Christ. Verse 16, I came near to one of those who stood by, and I asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. Those great beasts, which are four kings, which arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. By the way, when the Bible does that, when it takes something like forever, even forever and ever, this is like a sure thing. This is God emphasizing the point. He's driving it home. In other words, it's not going to happen. Verse 19, then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its nails of bronze, which devoured, broke in pieces, and trampled the residue with its feet, and the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, before which three fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows. I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints and prevailing against them until the Ancient of Days, and a judgment was made in favor of the saints of the Most High. And the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. So what we see there is Daniel's confused, he's troubled, he goes near to one who stands by, which is an angel, and he asks him, look, can you tell me what's really going on here? Give me the truth. What is it? So he tells him, and he gives it a synopsis in verse 17, one verse. The angel says, those great beasts, which are four kings, which arise out of the earth, but the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. So he's truncated the whole thing down to one verse. And so basically then Daniel goes, well, I'd like to know more. I really want to know about this fourth beast, who was so different from the other three that I can't even describe what he looked like, what he reminded me of. And then he goes through, and he just makes more descriptions. So, when he gets done with everything, verse 23, thus he said, referring back, of course, to the angel, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which shall be different from all other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, trample it, and break it into pieces. The 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall rise after them. He shall be different from the first ones and shall subdue three kings. He shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and laws. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time, times and half a time. But the court shall be seated, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it forever. then the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. His kingdom, Most High's kingdom, is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. This is the end of the account. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly troubled me, and my countenance changed. But I kept the matter in my heart. Now again, I can't imagine the awe, the fear, the trepidation of seeing some of these things in whatever it was, a vision, night vision, a dream. Consider what Ezekiel saw, Daniel saw, John, what even Paul himself saw when he was talking, I believe, to the Corinthians, when he says, hey, I know a man who was taken up to the third heaven, and he heard things that were unutterable, that I can't repeat. And that always makes me interested when I hear people today say something like, I died and went to heaven, and here's what Jesus told me. And here we have the Apostle Paul, who went to heaven and couldn't repeat anything. Not because he couldn't remember it, but because it was so awe-inspiring. Now, obviously, these particular prophets were given permission to not only write down what they saw, but they were given interpretation of what they saw. So the point for us is, God wants us to understand what's in here. So let's go through this. His vision is interpreted. The verse 15 where it says, as for me, Daniel, my spirit within me was anxious. The visions of my head alarmed me. It's a rhetorical question. You ever woken up in the middle of the night and go, and then you're like, your mind just goes? Or am I the only one? I mean, sometimes I'll just wake up and I'm going, and then you just, my mind, man, it just...
You mean it's turned on?
It's like completely turned on, and then I'm starting to think from one thing to the other, and I'm going, Lord God, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I need to get to sleep here. So what do? I immediately, as soon as I remember, I start reciting scripture in my head. I do that all the time. But here's Daniel, and he's thinking not about the stuff that goes on in life, but he's thinking about what he was shown, and it really troubled him. And I'm sure it troubled him because he didn't quite understand all that he was shown. He couldn't quite grasp it. Maybe there was a lot he couldn't grasp, which makes sense to us. So we see from the text that Daniel was anxious, he was alarmed. Can you all see this pretty good? Okay. Daniel went to one standing there for the truth, which was the interpretation, verse 16. And the angel explains the meaning of it from 16b to 18. Four beasts are four kings. In Scripture, wherever there is a horn, almost always, a horn or a mountain that almost always represents some type of empire. Now, in this case, we're learning, and the angel basically says it, those kingdoms are also kings. So you can't have a kingdom unless you have a leader of that kingdom. You can't have a kingdom unless there is one person where the buck stops. So the four beasts are four kings or kingdoms, same thing, out of the earth. And we know who they are: Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, then the Roman Empire. Now, of course, remember, the Grecian Empire was still in Daniel's future, and the Roman Empire was quite a ways into the future. So when God began to show Daniel, this is the Roman Empire, he didn't call it the Roman Empire, but he said, this is the fourth beast, which we know to be the Roman Empire. It was completely different than the others. So after the four beasts, kings and kingdoms, the saints shall receive the kingdom forever and ever. You know, sometimes I've been thinking about that more lately. It's like with everything that's going south in this world, things are bad in so many places. I think sometimes I said to someone the other day, I said, you know, I just wish I knew when the other shoe was going to drop. That's what I would like to know, because I'm just kind of getting tired of waiting. And we know, I've been reading reports from major well-known economists, and they don't have anything good to say. They're not really trying. Some of them are trying to make a buck off the fear, but some of them are just like, look, there's no way that this can continue. This amount of debt, there's just absolutely no way. Something has to give. And so they're kind of doing what they can to warn people that you can't go through life thinking, zippity-doo-dah. You just can't do that because you've got a big, dark cloud right up here that's going to start releasing rain and thunderstorms, and it's gonna change life forever. So the saints, though, I guess I make that point to say this. We are going to ultimately inherit the kingdom forever and ever and ever. That is the goal. That's what's going to happen. So no matter how bad, quote unquote, this life gets, it doesn't really matter because ultimately God is in control and He has promised that we will inherit this kingdom. And it will start on earth during Jesus' 1,000 millennial, same thing, reign. It'll start there, and then at the end of that 1,000 years, as I think I mentioned last week, when Jesus destroys this world and the heavens and creates totally new ones, it'll continue forever and ever. So I've been trying to keep my eye on this too, because what good does it do to be totally focused on the bad that's coming or even the bad that's here? It depends on the person and their situation, and not be able to look past it. So that's what I'm trying to do. Daniel then wanted to know more about the fourth beast in verses 19 to 20. This is what really confused him. He understood the basics of the three previous beasts, but this fourth one, man, it really confused him. He was totally perplexed. And yet, there was something about that beast that was extremely alarming to him. So he needed some information, knowledge, and he also needed some comfort, because he was not feeling real assured. Daniel could not really explain what it was in his terms. The fourth beast terrified him. And who knows? I don't know what he saw.
You know, we've got in our era, we see things on TV, we see scary things that are created. They didn't have fiction.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I guess they had writings but.
Yeah. I know. They to him, I mean, they didn't have, it's hard for us to relate because here we have technology today. I get on, you know, you see people walking down the street. You see kids walking down the street. They're buried right here. Mm-hmm. This digital world is the most important thing to them.
That's the great Satan right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, really, because they're not involved in real life. Mm-hmm. Their body's here, but they're involved here. Mm-hmm. This means more to them than what's over here. I've seen so many pictures and videos, you have too. People sit down at the table to eat, group of people. And what do? They're more into this. And so the reality is Daniel didn't have any of that. They didn't have any of that technology. They lived life really head on. What happened? I mean, you had wars, you had brutality, you had tyranny, you had death, you had destruction. And then on top of that, when God had something to say to Israel because they weren't obedient, we just saw this in Judges. What a cycle. I mean, the book of Judges starts off by affirming how good things were under Joshua and his leadership, and it wasn't long before things started really going south. And then you had a judge rise up, and then things continued to go south. It was this terribly base life circle that just, by the time you get to the end of the book of Judges, you feel like you need a shower. And the most recurring theme through that is, there was no king in Israel, and every man did what was right in his own eyes. Mm-hmm. That's the theme of Judges, and it proves it over and over again. You sit there and you think,
too.
I'm sorry?
It's the theme of Kings, first and second.
Oh, yeah.
Kings.
So you sit there and you go, these were Israelites. These were Israelites who were supposed, they had the law. They had a Levitical priesthood system. They had it, but man, you just go, wow. And yet, I don't want to condemn them, because we are people who are sinners by nature, so if left to ourselves, we will do that same kind of downward spiral. But this fourth beast was terrifying to him, and I'm thinking, whatever in whatever vision he saw this, he must have seen a level of fascism and tyranny that was non-existent for Cyrus, Darius, even in Babylon with Nebuchadnezzar. He was very tyrannical, but yet there were some good things, quote unquote, happening for the people in Babylon. You get to this one, and it is so perverse, so fascist, so tyrannical, that it would, I'm sure, just, he saw whatever it was he saw, and that scared him. And you wonder, well, are we getting to that? You look at some of the Supreme Court rulings lately, you look at the situation with the Trump trial in Georgia, and you sit there and go, the judge who's overseeing that particular trial with District Attorney Fannie Willis, I think that's her name, is it Fawny or Fanny, anyway, he donated to her, what was it?
Yeah, her, like, re-election.
Her election campaign so she could become a DA. He donated to it. So I'm thinking to myself, why isn't he recusing himself?
Right.
I mean, that's a no-brainer for me, so why doesn't he do it? So, I don't know. We sit there and we think, well, justice is going out the door.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he was specifically picked to rule over.
Of course he was.
Some other power. So he's up for election. He's a brand new appointed judge. You know, the fix is in.
Well, they all are.
It is a fix. There's always a fix.
There is. So he didn't understand the 10 horns on the fourth beast. Or that the fourth beast broke up everything before it. He didn't understand what that was all about. Again, I don't know what kind of caricature or vision, what it was all entailed there. We know that he saw things, but he didn't know how it went together. He didn't understand the 11th horn. Here's 10. What's this 11th one doing? I mean, I see him. He's got the eyes of a man. He's clearly pompous, clearly arrogant, and he's blaspheming the Most High. What is all that about? So he's confused. This horn was greater than its companions. That's interesting, because this was a little horn, which signifies that he was a little bit smaller physically than the other horns, but he was greater than its companions. So how does that happen?
More power, more money.
Yeah. So by way of recap, Babylon to revised Roman Empire. Notice how each one got bigger and bigger. Each new empire swallows up the previous. And by the time we get to the fourth, you can see how big and fat it is. It's ready to just incorporate everything. And it is, my understanding is that when it destroys, when it stomps the ground and breaks everything, well, part of that is it's breaking the world into the 10 sections. But the other part is, it is totally destroying what came before it. Or trying to. It's incorporating it. It's leaving nothing. You don't remember those previous empires, because I'm here now. And just so we're clear on this, this is really interesting. This is the Babylonian Empire. You can see it's pretty big. Here's Babylon way over here. Here's Judah, Israel over here, Jerusalem. So for Nebuchadnezzar to attack and sack Jerusalem, he had to go up this way, because he would not have gone over the mountains, because they were too big, too treacherous. So he would have gone over this way, which is why Babylon did not really have this part yet. But you can see there's the Babylonian Empire, and now we've got the Medo-Persian Empire. And the Medo-Persian Empire is interesting, because it's obviously gotten a lot bigger. I mean, this picture is closer, this is pulled back more, but here's the Caspian Sea. You can see how much bigger the Medo-Persian Empire got from the Babylonian Empire. And when the Babylonian Empire started, Nebuchadnezzar was the guy. The whole known world knew who he was and feared him. And yet the Medo-Persian Empire, because God said, came in, took over, and then expanded. And then we've got the next one, the Greek Empire. You can see that this has even gotten bigger. We are now out even just a little bit further. We've got more expansion this way. We've got more expansion down here in Egypt. We've got more expansion here. Why? Because this is where Alexander came from. So all of this became part of the Greek Empire. And then we finally have the Roman Empire, which, as you can see, went way past Greece, Macedonia, way over to Britain, all the top of the African continent, all of this. So they really expanded. Each new empire took and increased in size. So the 11th Horde made war with the saints and prevailed. Now that's interesting. We'll talk about that in a minute. This coincides with Revelation 13:7 during the tribulation. This is the second half of the tribulation. Second half. Now the 11th horn, obviously, if he is able to make war with the saints and prevail, that means that he has become the big dog, the top guy. So we know that he is the 11th, but as we talked about last week, he then uproots 3, leaving 7. He becomes the 8th, and the remaining 7 fear for their lives, so they give him loyalty. At least it's a tenuous loyalty. Toward the end there's some pushing and shoving, and no, I'm not following you, and all that kind of stuff. But generally, during this time period, which is in the second half of the tribulation, this 11th horn, who is also the Antichrist that Paul speaks about in 2 Thessalonians 2, that guy. And by the way, next week we're going to talk about a type of Antichrist, Antiochus Epiphanes, in chapter 8 of Daniel. And it's really fascinating, the parallels between the two. But this guy is the epitome. Antiochus Epiphanes in next week's Daniel 8 is a type of Antichrist, but not the Antichrist. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And this especially refers to many of the tribulation saints who are in Israel, except, of course, the ones that flee and make it to probably Petra, where God has provided for them. But this is interesting. And it was given unto him. God allows it. God allows it. Not Satan. God allows it. It's no different than when Satan came before God in Job chapter 1 with the sons of God. And the sons of God are what?
Angels.
They're absolute angels. If you read Job 1, there's no way you can come across thinking, oh, they were just mighty men. Or righteous. No, they were sons of God. They came before God in God's throne room in Job chapter 1, and Satan was there. And so it's the same thing. Satan came to God, basically, you know the story. And God brings up Job the first by himself. Oh, have you noticed my servant Job? Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, see how righteous he is? And how committed to me he is? Yep. But you know what? He is that way because you built a hedge around him. You remove that hedge, I can make him fall. Oh, you think so? Okay, all right. I'll give you permission. Same thing here. God is giving the 11th horn the permission to make war against the saints and to overcome them. This will be a brief time at the last part of the tribulation. Everything ramps up at the end of the tribulation. We've got this going on, and then we have eventually the Armageddon War, where Antichrist gathers all the troops of the earth, and he brings them all to Israel because he's aware of the fact that at some point Jesus is going to return physically. So his goal is to gather as many troops as he can from around the world and fight Jesus to keep him from coming back. I think I've mentioned that to you. So all of that is happening during the last portion of the tribulation, and things ramp up just before Christ returns. This occurs until the Ancient of Days, the Father, comes to render judgment through his Son. Remember, Jesus will be able, he is granted the ability to judge the nations. Why? Because of his perfection in the way he followed the Father every step of the way. And unlike you and me, he did it with no sin. No sin at all. The saints will inherit the kingdom of God at that point after the judgment. The angel provides more information regarding the fourth beast. And again, this beast is personified by and in this Antichrist dude. No idea who he is. I don't believe he's on the scene yet, at least not publicly. He's probably alive. He's probably somewhere doing something, whatever he's supposed to do. But at some point, he will step up onto the world. And as I mentioned this, I think last week, it'll happen probably shortly after the 10 kings take their place and this world is divided into 10 sections. Because they will have done all the grunt work, so he doesn't have to. When he sees everything in place, that's when he makes his move. But also, don't forget, he is also going to be the guy in Daniel 9, 24 through 27, who brokers a treaty with Israel and surrounding Arab nations for 1 week. And 1 week is 7 years, because that whole chapter 9 is based on 7 weeks or seven sevens, which is, if we go, well, we'll go through that, so I don't want to get ahead of myself. So it's different from previous kingdoms. It devours the whole earth, literally the whole earth, not just the whole known earth, the entire earth. That's what's going to happen. So one day, isn't it weird to think about the fact that one day this entire world will be made up of one kingdom, originally, or at least initially, governed by 10 individuals, and then the 11th guy will come up, wrest control from them, and then take it further. I mean, it's really weird to think that. It sounds like a conspiracy theory. It really does. But like so many conspiracy theories, it's funny how often they come true. So it destroys everything under its rule throughout the earth. 10 horns will rise. 11th horn will come up among them. He will not be part of them. The 11th horn is different. He's bigger, more powerful than the horns. He's not necessarily bigger physically in stature, but he is more powerful. Why is he more powerful? Because Paul tells us in 2 Thessalonians that this guy will be fully involved with Satan and possessed by him, so that the two, you couldn't put a hair between the two. Satan will fully possess this individual at some point. So, the 11th horn takes out, uproots three of the 10 horns. He becomes the 8th, rules over all the horns, over all the earth, and his arrogance speaks against the Most High. It's almost like he will spend his time daring God to take him out. And he will use the fact that God did not take him out to prove to earth people, see, your God's nothing, that Christian God. Look, why didn't he take me out? This is exactly, by the way, the mentality of the ancient empires when one kingdom conquered another. One of the first things they did was go into their area of worship, whatever it was, some kind of temple, among whatever it was, and take the gods, the representation of the gods for that empire, and cart it back to where they lived. That's exactly why Nebuchadnezzar took what he took from the Jewish temple in Jerusalem, because he was really saying, look, I'm more powerful than this God, because this God didn't stop me from taking these things. That was the mentality. You remember when, I forget exactly where it was, I think it was in 1st or 2nd Samuel, maybe it was Deuteronomy, Sylvia, you can help me remember, when they were moving, the Israelites went and got the Ark of the Covenant, because they thought it would help them fight the Philistines, and it didn't. And lo and behold, worst case scenario happened. The Philistines actually captured the Ark of the Covenant. And they brought it to their own place, and they put it before Dagon, the image of their god that they had created. And then what happened? The next morning, Dagon was falling over on his face. So they uprighted it. Next day, he fell over on his face, his hands and his head cut off.
First Samuel, we're reading it tomorrow.
So this is what they did. This is what Antichrist will do, which is why Paul tells us in 2 Thessalonians 2, he literally waltzes into the Holy of Holies and then declares himself to be God. And that is a dare to the Israelite God, our God, Yahweh. Do something about it. I'm here in the Holy of Holies. Gosh, you said if a priest came in here more than once a year, they'd be killed. I'm still alive. You must be fake. So this is what's going to be something that the people of this world will see, and they'll go, well, he's right. He's still alive. Still alive. But interestingly, at that point, the Jews, who originally thought he was the Messiah, will all of a sudden realize they were totally duped. And they will run to Petra. And he will go after them, but he will fail. He will change the times and the law. This is no different than what Nebuchadnezzar did, what Darius, the Mede, Cyrus, any of them. Nebuchadnezzar, as I mentioned to you before when we were talking with chapter 2, could make any law he wanted and was not under that law. He was totally exempt from it. This is what this guy is going to be doing. He is not going to need a Congress. He is not going to need a judicial branch. He is going to need nothing. He will be the president of the world, a law unto himself. Whatever he says will go. And then he is exempt from it. So he will do anything he wants to do. If he wants to introduce a new annual calendar, he will do that. If he wants to eliminate laws or make laws, he will do that. And no one will be able to say to him, you can't do that. It's unconstitutional. Not like they care anyway today. When they're told it's unconstitutional, it doesn't matter. All the earth shall be his for a time, times, and half a times. 1 year, this is 2 years. 1 and 2 is 3, and then half a times. 3.5. So at the midpoint of the tribulation to the end of it, that's when he gets to do whatever he wants. So 3.5 years, second half of the tribulation. Christ refers to this as the great tribulation in Matthew 24. He talks about first there, he goes, there will be tribulation as has never visited this earth before, nor ever will. And then he says, there will be great tribulation. So he uses both terms. It's truly a global government at that. You know, I don't know about you, but this is hard for me to envisage. I mean, isn't it? We're in America. This country was founded on a constitution. We have 3 branches of government for checks and balances. And yet all we see is people in D.C. not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and nothing happens to them. And that is so exceedingly frustrating for us, because we think, look, you know, I get tired of politicians who say about America when they go, you know, in our democracy, and I want to scream at them and say, we are not a democracy. Have you not read the Constitution? We are a constitutional republic. I'm glad we're not a democracy, but I think part of the reason they keep saying that is to brainwash people into thinking that we are a democracy. And when it's democracy, mob rules. When it's a constitutional republic, everybody gets a vote. Huge difference. But none of that will matter, because we are eventually going to be here. And we need to remember, as unsatisfying as that may sound or feel, God is the one who allows it.
That's right.
It's his program. It's his earth, not Satan's. If he wants to draw Satan out this way into public, into, you know, the public, and put him on display, then that's what he's going to do. And when he's out there through his son Antichrist, and very, very public, then you know that his demise is equally as public. What does this mean?
Close. It's getting close. If he's out
okay.
there public, it's
I
getting
thought
close.
You were trying to tell me I was needed to do something. Remember, I don't know sign language. Now, if it had gone like this, I would have understood that. How does the world get to this point? Well, it's been getting there for quite a while. But we'll get back to that. The fourth beast in Daniel 7, by the way, is also the seventh king, or the seventh king in Revelation 17:10. Same thing. When you study Revelation, you really should study Ezekiel and Daniel at the same time. That's an awful lot to cover, but there are so many connections, it's pitiful. I shouldn't say pitiful. It's praiseworthy, because God put it together like that. The eighth king of Revelation 17:10 is the same as the 11th horn as Daniel 7:24. Same person. Same exact guy.
Okay, real quick, question.
Yes.
All right, so in the beast, I thought they were consecutive, you know, because you've got the different kingdoms. Mm-hmm. But the horns are, they coexist. They're simultaneous. Because, okay, all right, so.
Yeah, and just remember, Daniel chapter 2, 10 toes.
Right.
Is the same as the 10 kings of Revelation and the 10 horns of Daniel 7. Right? Am I making sense?
Say it again.
The 10 toes of Daniel 2 mm-hmm. on that statue, the toes are the same as the 10 kings or the 10 horns of Daniel 7 and the 10 kings of Revelation 17.
Right, okay.
So, the beast is comprised of the 10 horns. And at some point, this little horn comes up, plucks up the three, comes the eighth. But then those eighth still...
The seven.
Comprise the seven plus the one.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Comprise the beast kingdom.
Correct.
Right.
And then eventually, the eighth king,
he becomes
the beast right. all by himself, and these others are just tag-alongs.
Right.
Until they rebel. Yes. Okay. So, once the final kingdom of Revelation 13:1-8 and 17:10-11. You know, I honestly love the way God repeats himself, because I'm a guy who needs to hear it over and over again. I have to. So that's why God repeats himself as often as he does, because he knows our frame, physically and mentally. Now, granted, there are some people who can pick things up like this with their photographic memory, but I'm not one of them, so I need to have it repeated. So the final kingdom of these sections of Scripture in Revelation is established by the ten horns. Then the Antichrist comes along. He rises to power, gets rid of three. There's seven left. They pledge loyalty to him. Whatever.
Probably because of what he did to the three.
Well, sure.
They're
absolutely.
About what's going to become of them.
Absolutely. And you know, you think about the treachery and the smugness. Right now we've got globalists. And I'll use his name again, Klaus Schwab. The guy is so arrogant. It's disgusting. But he has reason to be arrogant, because he's that close. He's that close, as I said last week, to turning the key for this global government. And a lot of things have to happen until that happens. But he's very, very confident that it will happen. So, Sylvia and I have talked about this. And I said, wouldn't it be funny? Not ha-ha. Wouldn't it be interesting? Let me use that term. If he's one of the ten horns... And then the 11th comes up, takes out three, and he's one of the three that gets knocked out. Mm-hmm. And I can think of a few other people. But it doesn't matter if it happens now or then. Obviously, they're going to face judgment. But king and kingdom, again, are used interchangeably because they're connected. You can't have a king without a kingdom. You can't have a kingdom without a king. So you can't have a guy walking around saying, I'm a king. Now, in the Old Testament... Often, kings were kings of just cities.
Yeah.
They just had a city. Sometimes if they had a big area, they might have up to 26 cities. Often they just had one city,
right.
And they were a king of that city.
Yeah.
By the way, if you ever, I think I may have mentioned this to you, there is a really good biblical archaeologist. Have I mentioned to you, what's his name? Joel somebody. Go look up.
Yeah, we talked about it, Expedition
Bible. Okay, Expedition Bible. He just did like 15, 20-minute videos. He goes to these places, he and his son. He's phenomenal, but they just... One thing we just saw the other day was on Nineveh. Mm-hmm. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. Absolutely fascinating.
Joel
All right,
Kramer.
So...
Joel Kramer, yeah.
Joel Kramer. And it's called Expedition Bible?
Yes.
Okay, on YouTube. He is really, really good. Sylvia was so impressed she bought his book. Fourth beast in Daniel 7:7, the ten horns, and multi-headed beast of Revelation 13:1-2, with seven heads. The ten horns represent the final global order. We're not going to really discuss the seven heads. We cover that in Revelation, but no, ultimately they all kind of come together. Now, precursor to the global order, the beast will rule during the time of the end. This is the last chapter of Daniel. We've got a few chapters to go before we get there. But in this chapter 12, he kind of wraps things up. And basically says, this is what's going to happen at the time of the end. What end is he talking about? The end of human history before Jesus returns. So we're obviously getting there. Each day brings us one day closer. Global elites have been planning a global kingdom. Get this. I think I mentioned this last week. I hope I didn't, but if I did, forgive me for repeating myself, but it's important. They have been planning this thing for almost 100 years in modern times. Technocracy, I don't know if you've heard that, which is basically technology used to control global society. I've mentioned it. This is technology. That's technology. That's technology. The video camera is technology. Elon Musk is putting up thousands and thousands of satellites in low orbit.
Starlink.
Yeah, and everybody thinks, oh, that's awesome. But it'll be used, like anything, it'll be used. It's good and bad. This can be good. It can actually save your life if you're stuck out there and nowhere and you do have a cell signal and you can call for help. But it can also surveil you, it can track you, it can collect your data to Google and everybody else, and then they sell it even when they say they're not. I think it's hilarious that our government is going, we need to ban TikTok. We need to ban that. Really? Why aren't we banning Google, Meta, a few other places, that all they do is take our data and sell it? Why aren't we dealing with them? Why are we dealing with TikTok? Oh, because they're connected to the CCP. No, they're not really. No, they're not really. China does not control TikTok. I don't think that TikTok is good, and I see too many kids using it, but TikTok only, or China only allows a censored version of TikTok in their country. They don't control it. But why is our government wasting the time with that and making it sound like such a big deal when we've got Google, Meta, and an extremely open border, porous border, where people are just flooding in. They're flooding in from the north, too.
Mm-hmm. Because it's the foothold for controlling other social media.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. That's the purpose. Eventually, they want to clamp down on free speech.
Yes.
That's all they want to do. But they're making it sound like, you know, we really care for you.
So we're here to help you.
We are going to ban TikTok.
We'll protect your children.
Yes, we love your kids. That's why we want them to have hormone blockers, and if they want to change from boy to girl and back, we're all for it. Craziness. Mm-hmm. Stupidity.
Our culture is getting destroyed.
I'm sorry?
Yes, our culture is getting destroyed, and I don't think we're going to be strong enough to overcome all that. That's why our nation, could America become the great Satan?
Yeah. Good.
I think we're on our way.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think so. I agree with you. We're not going to be collectively strong enough to overcome it. I think.
That's those 10 toes.
Yeah.
You can't, you know.
And they don't get along.
They don't.
They're clay. They're.
See, but I think, clay. Honestly, small groups, church groups like this, that's where we're going to benefit. That's where we're going to benefit. But as far as changing the country.
Well, I mean, if it's God's will for this country, even though it's unpleasant to be a night, you know, it could be a nightmare, but mm-hmm. it's God's will. And I mean, I have trouble because your instinct is to fight against the corruption, but God tell you, know, he,
I know
this is his will for the end time.
Yeah.
So you gotta look at it differently, I guess is what I'm trying to
say. Yeah, and I, in my mind, I keep going back to what the first century Christians had to deal with.
Oh, yeah.
There was tremendous corruption, especially when Nero became emperor. And whether he started Rome on fire and fiddled or not, who knows? But the reality is, he found a group to blame, and the blame was laid on the Christians. And they started treating them so horrendously that even the non-Christian pagan Romans got up in arms about it. But I mean, things can go south quickly. And I think we've got, they just arrested a guy, who waltzed into America, and in the course, this just happened a day or two ago, and in the course of interviewing him or interrogating him, he actually admitted he was part of Hezbollah, and he came to this country, and he was going to put a bomb together and then create a scene, kill people. So this is, and I told Sylvia yesterday, I said, Sylvia, this is what we're up against. So here's the reality. God will protect us. I don't think we need to walk around in fear, but I've told my wife, I said, you don't leave the house without that thing and you carry that thing with you. And I said, when you're walking and you're by yourself, unfortunately she has to do things by herself sometimes. I'd like to be her bodyguard all the time, but when she's walking, her head's on a swivel. You have to be aware of what's going on around you. You have to be. You can't go on your phone or this. You have to be aware. You have to be aware. I've watched too many videos, surveillance videos of women standing waiting for a bus or a train. They're like this. Some guy comes behind him and slams him with a baseball bat or pushes him down the stairs. Or what they started doing, they started taking syringe needles and just injecting. They don't know what they're injected with. I mean, we have to be careful. But we don't need to live in fear. I refuse to be fearful. Mm-hmm. I refuse. And I feel like if I'm aware of my surroundings, if I know what's happening, that's most of the battle right there. Mm-hmm. People are not going to bother me if I know they're there. But they'll try to bother me if I'm totally clueless. So that's technocracy. It started in 1932 at Columbia University. The elites are using technocracy. They don't call it that. They call it sustainable development.
So it sounds good.
Doesn't it sound good? It sounds so loving of Earth. But they are using those goals to end poverty, protect the planet, improve lives and prospects of everyone everywhere. Doesn't that make your heart just go?
And it's right up under the caption to eliminate 80% of the world population.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But this is what they tell us publicly because it makes it sound so good. Mm-hmm. So when Klaus Schwab gets up there and he goes, he's got a big smile on his face. When Noah Harari, one of his advisors at the WEF, says, you know, we need to reduce the planet by 80%, and I hope it can be done, you know, without much fuss. Literally.
You didn't volunteer, though.
I say volunteer these people, but anyway. So they've got 17 goals that were, check this out, I don't know if you know this, these were adopted by the UN member states in 2015. The U.S. is a member state of the UN. Mm-hmm. And any chance of us getting out of it with the current administration is not going to happen. So that was adopted in 2015. It was called the Agenda 2030, meaning from 2015, there were 15 years to put those 17 sustainable goals into place throughout the world. I know some of you know this. Every UN agency, including the WHO, works to make that happen. First phase of this coming global government may soon appear in this world. We may actually see it. Right now, we kind of figure things are going on behind the scenes. The globalists are looking really confident. What are they going to roll out? Economists are saying by this fall, you know, the economy is really going to hit the fan. We'll see what happens. The EU is already fully functional. We know that. Oh, and by the way, many conservative commentators believe that the fourth beast is ultimately going to rise up from the same place the old Roman Empire was, which is where the EU is now. So we'll see what happens there. It's a good place to keep an eye on. Plans are in place for a North American region, a South American region, etc. All this is based on the Club of Rome. Have you heard about the Club of Rome? I'm sure some of you have. Anyway, they divided up the world into 10 sections. This is their paperwork from, I forget when, it says 2009, but I think it was earlier than that. So every country in the world is part of a particular partition, a section. So here's the world, the whole world, right now divided up into 10 sections right there. This is what one of their goals is. So you don't have to sit there and go, I wonder how the world's going to be divided up. It's right there. This is what their plan is. The Club of Rome is basically an offshoot of a UN agency. It's a think tank like WEF or the Bilderberg Group. This fourth beast has been given numerous names today. The New World Order is what you hear most often, but it's really the fourth beast. The Declaration of North America, DNA, isn't that cute?
Yeah, cute.
It was signed on January 10th, 2023. How many of you knew about that?
No.
Okay. That's the Declaration of North America. It is a preliminary document that facilitates increased cooperation between Canada, USA, and Mexico. That is, what did it used to be called? It used to be called NAFTA, mm-hmm. North American Free Trade Agreement. Well, that didn't work so well. So they moved
DNA
on to something else.
Better.
I'm sorry?
DNA sounds better.
It does sound good.
Yeah.
So that's where they're moving. Some countries, China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, they're probably not going to want to go along with this. So there's going to be, guess what? War. All right. The Antichrist will change the times and the law. He will do whatever he wants to do. He will be the absolute tyrannical ruler of the world when he steps up, gets rid of three kings, seven are left, and then the rest are forced to be loyal to him. And we talked about Nebuchadnezzar. He could make laws but was above following them. Antichrist would do the same. And then he will be the absolute dictator over the world. This is in the tribulation period, which has not started yet. And it doesn't start. We'll get to it in chapter 9. We know the exact event. We don't know the time. We know the exact event that kicks off the tribulation. We're not there yet. It hasn't happened yet.
Well, but, is that back up to that map? Is that the 10 horns?
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're combined with all of North Canada and...
Yeah, so here we go. Once the world is broken up into 10 pieces, and this happens before Antichrist, I wouldn't be surprised if this happens before the tribulation. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But there will be a ruler, a horn, over each of these 10 sections. Isn't that exciting? Mm-hmm. Satan has not slept.
No.
He does not sleep. He doesn't need to. He has a plan, and he's learned from his mistakes. He's brilliant, he's not omniscient, he is certainly not God, but he is extremely, extremely brilliant.
I want to say one thing about this second bullet. Separately, the Antichrist brokers a peace deal with Israel surrounding Arab nations for 1 week. I think that's to create a Palestinian state. Hmm? You know, I've always wondered, why 7 years? What's the deal? You know, of course, it's a biblical issue, you know.
Right.
But what would take 7 years? Well, a peace treaty between the Arabs and Israel to create a Palestinian state would take maybe 7 years to implement.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that there is a treaty, what is it, the Abraham Accords?
Yeah.
Okay, that's not really in effect right now. It was going to be under Trump, but it's not right now.
I'm just saying that's what I look to, you know, especially with this war currently going on.
Yeah.
Between, what is it, Hezbollah and Israel, or Hamas and
Hamas,
Israel.
Hezbollah.
But Hezbollah's in the middle of it too. And, you know, that's a good catalyst to cause a reason to broker a peace treaty.
Oh, yeah, something's going to happen. You know what I think would be hilarious? But I guess I shouldn't say hilarious. Hamas is known for shooting off their rockets and missing all the time. And then if they hit a hospital, which they've done, then they blame Israel. Mm-hmm. And it comes out later that Israel didn't shoot that rocket off. Hamas did. But then the news doesn't care, so they're already on to something else. I think it would be very, very interesting. Obviously, the temple can't be rebuilt because there's something called the... Dome of the Rock Mosque on top of it. There's actually three mosques up there. One is underground. You've got the Dome of the Rock and then Al-Aqsa Mosque on the Temple Mount. So, and now it's Ramadan, so they're getting upset and blah, blah, blah. But I think it'd be interesting if Hamas or Hezbollah or Iran fired off a rocket and wound up accidentally hitting the Dome of the Rock. Dome of the Rock Mosque. Now, of course, they're going to blame Israel for that, and it'll come out later that they didn't do that. But with the Dome of the Rock Mosque gone, then the Temple Mount can be cleared. I mean, on paper, Israel controls the Temple Mount. They have since 1967. They made a stupid mistake.
Moshe
Dayan.
Yeah.
Yeah, they made a stupid mistake with Moshe Dayan, and they still allowed the Muslims, Islam, to be the police officers, the security. So they were trying to be nice, but it backfired on them. So we'll see what happens. But we already did this. Antichrist brokers a deal. He actually confirms a covenant that is already in existence, but he confirms it. So that takes place in Daniel 9. We'll talk about that when we get there. In the middle of that week, that covenant, he breaks the covenant. And that happens in the middle of the week, mid-trib. That's when he waltzes into
the Jewish temple, sits in the Holy of Holies, and says, I'm God. So Antichrist desperately will need this Jewish temple to be rebuilt. Because he will need to prove to the world that he is God. And when he goes into the Holy of Holies, and God says, God does nothing, then it will prove to the world his own deity. And he will be demanding, he will demand to be worshipped as God. The New World Order is being built now, as I mentioned, under sustainable development, climate change scam to force the world to give up things, give control to the globalists, remove all freedoms from all people. They're desperately trying throughout Europe and other parts of the world to eliminate farming.
Our food source.
Well, they're stupid, but they're not stupid. They're using it control.
Right, they can control people who are starving. They can control people who are starving.
Right, so I was talking
that's
to
Stephen. That's what Stalin did.
I was, that's what Lenin did.
30 million Russians.
Yeah. So that's what Lenin did.
Ukrainians, they starved them out.
Yeah, with the Bolshevik Revolution and everything. You look at history and you see how often the same stuff is being done. Anyway, but they don't teach history anymore. Goal is to surveil everyone all the time to control movement, food intake, travel, health, and then ultimately they want to create human 2.0 so that they want to modify and change the DNA genome so that we are no longer just this basic human, but we'll be human 2.0 where it's a blending of machine and humanity. Because ultimately, and by the way, the reason they're doing all this is because globalists want to...
live forever.
Yeah,
they want to live forever, so they want all the experimentation to be done on the average person. Okay. They'll find out what works and what doesn't. So when they get something that totally works, then they'll use it. And they want to rest. Ultimately, it's all about this.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's all about Psalm 2. That society wants to wrest control from God to shake off his chains. These are chains. We don't like you. Get away. So that's what they're trying to do. Mm. People don't realize that we the people are the ones globalists, as I mentioned, experiment on. And they do this with highly processed, there's so much garbage in these foods that they produce. Yeah. When I was growing up and when you were growing up, food was food.
Yeah.
I remember when TV dinners were first introduced, it was still food. It was still food. But now, then they said, oh gosh, we've got to put chemicals in here to make the food last longer so it's shelf stable.
It'll look prettier.
And it'll look pretty. And we can add some taste enhancement chemicals to make it taste really good. Well, anyway, so that's what they do. All this stuff to find out what works and what doesn't. They want to live forever. This is Satan's version of eternal life. That's what Satan's version of the eternal life is. Can we stop the world and world? The New World Order from happening? No. But this is where we need to be as Christians, trusting God every day for everything and gaining strength from God to overcome. Okay, this just came out. I hope you can hear it. It's about a minute. Maybe.
It's 2 minutes.
Okay. Go.
Where is the... Oh, man. I don't have any sound.
Okay, well, you might be able to get it from what you see here. This is the President of the United States is talking, and he's talking about pandemics and the need for biodefense, because there's too many things out there. So now we're going above his head, and this thing happens, and it releases this pathogen right into him. I'm sorry, I don't have sound. And now the president is hospitalized, and they say that he's going into a coma. This was just released 2 weeks ago. Now they're talking about this new virus pathogen that is going to just wash over the whole thing. This is the vice president in Air Force One, and he's talking to her saying, well, we don't know, you know, it moves very, very fast, and we don't know how to control it. And she goes, well, then we need to move faster, blah, blah, blah. So now they're releasing all kinds of stuff it's full of measures that demand attention. This was, and they're talking about this fall. So they're saying this could happen this fall. And I thought it was very interesting that this is coming out now, because what else happens this fall?
Our election.
We have an election, supposedly. So anyway, it's called BioDefense, and BioDefense is a think tank in Washington, D.C., and it is made up of former congresspeople, Joe Lieberman, Governor Tom Ridge, doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican, these people, there's a whole list of people, this is Senator Tom Daschle, all these people are involved in this.
And they created this trailer.
They created this trailer.
Wow.
So you sit there and you go, why? It's privately funded, it's created by former congresspeople and others who worked in D.C. or still work there, and their goal is to provide for a comprehensive assessment of the state of the U.S. biodefense efforts and to issue recommendations that will foster change. I don't know why they put out this trailer, but it's kind of weird to me.
What is it
a trailer of? Is it going to be a full-length film? Or
apparently.
Full-length cartoon?
It's not Nickelodeon, so, you know, I don't know. It's just weird.
They're already working on another virus. It's called Virus X. They already know the name.
Oh, yeah, Disease X. But don't worry. Don't worry. They're working on the vaccine for Disease X. They don't know what it is yet, but they're working on the vaccine. So when it comes out, they'll have a vaccine ready. But they don't know what it is yet. But forgive me for my sarcasm. But here's some, you might want to, I don't know if you've ever heard of the grape taking. I wonder if I could, here. And then we're done. Hang on. Oh, I'm not connected to the internet. I'll get there in a minute. If you'll bear with me just a second or two here. It's only a minute or two deal. Yeah, this is. I thought this was really interesting. I'm sure. Here we go. Okay. I have no idea why I don't have sound. I'll tell you what, I'll send you all a link. It's a 3:59 video.
Well, we can start with it next week. Maybe we need some speakers.
Yeah, maybe I'll get it figured out. There should be a speaker here. But anyway, what the video is saying is that during the Depression, the banksters did the same thing they're trying to do now. And if you think about what happened during the Depression, it wasn't just the stock market. It was a whole bunch of other things. And as it says in the video, I didn't realize this, but when it started, Roosevelt, the President of the United States at that time, closed all the banks. Yeah. Except for a few banks. And those banks were directly connected with the federal government. So people not only lost all their money, but the only banks they could deal with were the ones who were connected to the government. Anyway, it's a real interesting stuff. If you want to write down some of this stuff, The Great Taking, that's an actual documentary. Here she comments on it. But I'll tell you what, I'll just send you the link. So you don't have to worry. I'll just send you the link.